Okay, let's pick up where we were. As I was saying, the manipulators in this world have been so careful and have been so patient in many cases to where they have hemmed in and hedged in to a great extent the middle class in this country. And this has come about as a result of laws that have been passed in Congress that have been lobbied for and that they have been paid for by great moneyed invested interests in this world that may not even be a part of this country in some cases. And these laws have been primarily to make the rich richer and to take the money from the middle class, give a little bit of it to the poor people in a socialized program, social program that makes everybody look good as though they were a beneficent, an altruistic giving government. And the rest of it has gone to line the pockets of all people who are already multimillionaires and billionaires in some cases, and has been poured down rat holes all over this world in foreign aid and things of this nature. It's almost unfathomable and unspeakable. The corruption that is extant in this world today, no wonder God says how much he hates it, and no wonder he is going to absolutely destroy it and smash it into smithereens. May the day be hastened. I do say that. Anyway, let me pick up where I was here. The theory of sustainable development can be compared to or likened to a prism. A prism is shaped like a long, slender pyramid. And it has three sides. And as you turn it, the light catches, you know, the different sides of the prism and reflects different colors. Well, the three sides of the sustainable development prism are social, economic, and environmental. Now, these facets mirror Prince Charles' holistic philosophy of the relationship of the individual to the environment in economic, social, and spiritual terms. Even though these issues appear to be separate, they have all been integrated as one through the public-private partnership concept. And as a result of environmental ideology permeating all aspects of life, like I just said, it takes on a spiritual aspect that mirrors this Gaia philosophy. When the three become one through partnership, they form the philosophical approach that's going to change government and life as we have known it, especially in this country, but in other countries as well, in the global sense. As the precepts of the Constitution are eliminated, and I'm talking here about the U.S. Constitution, as the precepts of the U.S. Constitution are eliminated through new legislation, and that's been going on for some years now, and in fact, I'm probably going to amass some information on that for you just to show you how some of the changes have come about through laws that are on the books that you and I and the average person would not normally be aware of at all that are already on the books that have already abridged your constitutional rights that were guaranteed in the original Constitution as the Founding Fathers envisioned it. But this is highly increasing greatly each year, each session of Congress, each time the president makes an executive order, or maybe not each time, but certainly many times when the president makes an executive order, it is for the very purpose of undermining the Constitution, or at least it accomplishes that purpose. Now, picking up where I was saying that as the precepts of the U.S. Constitution are eliminated through new forms of legislation, the power of the Constitution is eroded, and its place in public-private partnerships, which are not representative government at all. And so you're going to have the public-private partnership, and it may be called by any number of names, who can say, is essentially going to replace the U.S. Constitution. It's essentially going to replace even any other national constitution, or at least that would be the goal, to erase national boundaries, to erase national sovereignty, and to be a part of the global village, the global community. The balance of power shifts from the people to the partner who has the most money. This is and always will be man's way of acquiring power. And as the power shifts to the deepest pockets, which usually is a corporation, well, the shift is going to bring us into corporate fascism, which is ruled by and controlled by corporations. All across this country, public-private partnerships are being set up. And as a result, people have not come to the understanding of this important shift. And they are powerless, really, to change the rules that are being set down because they don't know enough about them. And even if they could, it is highly unlikely that in a nation of this size that enough opposition could be stirred up to where a total revolution took place, because that is precisely what is needed. Now, I'm not advocating it, but I'm just saying the only way that this country could escape just temporarily would be through a revolution, which is not going to happen, in my estimation. Of course, the only way they can escape ultimately is for total repentance and turning to God. That does not look like it will be a reality either at this moment in time. But certainly this country could revolt if there were widespread enough understanding of what's going on. But you know, we are such an apathetic people. We are such a complacent people that it's really going to take something drastic to bring that kind of fervor to the fore. And believe me, that time is coming when drastic action is going to be taken and is going to be inflicted upon not only this nation, but all the nations of the world. And it's going to be a tough time for those who are not a part of or who do not cooperate with the system in this world. Now, as I was saying before, I get off on these tangents. I'm sorry. Sorry about that. But the Prince of Wales Business Leaders Forum works very closely with the United Nations Development Program and the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund, as well as a number of other multilateral and global agencies and organizations. The executive director of the United Nations Development Program is James Gustav Speth, who has held very important and key positions in a number of key radical environmental groups. In 1982, he was chosen to head the World Resources Institute, which was created by the International Union for the Conservation of Nature, or the IUCN as it's often referred to, which is another United Nations organization. It's published a number of very key environmental publications that are considered foundational building blocks for what is generally known as the New World Order, such as World Conservation Strategy, Caring for the Earth, and From Care to Action, Making a Sustainable World. These are just some of the titles of publications that they have produced. Bill Clinton appointed Speth for his term, and it's going to end in 1999, which will be the year, I guess, that Al Gore will begin his run for the presidency of the United States. Anyway, the structural framework leading up to the current activities of the Prince of Wales Business Leaders Forum is the result of the globalization process that has been going on since about 1980 to 82. Globalization is the breaking down of laws, trade, finance, business, transportation, civil, commercial, all of which prohibit across-the-border transactions. In the early 1980s, a number of developed countries, including the United States, through the passage of the Monetary Control Act of 1980, adopted laws making it legal to invest in other countries. These laws are responsible for more than $1.2 trillion that moves around the world on a daily basis. The drive for a borderless world economically began about 1944 with what is known as the Bretton Woods Monetary Conference that was held over, if I'm not mistaken, it's in England, yes. There are seven At this conference, 700 delegates agreed to establish the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, the International Trade Organization, which is generally known as the ITO and is very prominent today, as you well know, because the NAFTA and GATT treaties are basically the foundational building blocks of the World Trade Organization today. So that's very much in the news. The Senate ratified the first two, the Bretton Woods Conference, that is to say the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, but it did not ratify the third one, which was, of course, the World Trade Organization, at least not at that time. Now, it wasn't until December of 1994 when the Senate passed the GATT Treaty, which became the United Nations World Trade Organization in 1995, that the final economic foundation stone was laid. The 1990 organizational meeting in Charleston was called Stakeholders, the Challenge in a Global Market. Over 100 CEOs from major multinational organizations attended this two-day conference. Those firms were corporations like Goodyear Tire and Rubber, USA Today, Sara Lee Corporation, Bell South, J.C. Penney, Equitable Life, Johnson Publishing, KKR, the big takeover corporation, Monsanto, Pillsbury, New York Stock Exchange, Exxon, Caterpillar, Procter & Gamble, DuPont. I mean, it was just amazing how many of the corporate leading corporations attended this particular conference. And I could go on and name a whole bunch of others that I have here in various notes. The Prince of Wales Business Leaders Forum is an educational charity with close to 50 multinational corporations from the United States, Great Britain, Germany, Japan, several other countries, on its executive directory. The U.S. corporations who work very closely with Prince Charles include the 3M Corporation, American Express, TRW, Coca-Cola, SmithKline-Beecham, ARCO, Cigna, DHL Worldwide Express, Levi Strauss & Company, the Perot Group, and U.S. West International. Additional partners are the American Chamber of Commerce, the American Hotel and Motel Association, the Atlantic Project, Charles Stewart Mott Foundation, the City of Charleston, South Carolina, the Ford Foundation, the Kellogg Foundation, Eli Lilly & Company, the New York City Housing Partnership, the Office of Ronald Reagan, the Soros Foundation, Texaco, Tufts University, Turner Broadcasting, USAID or USAID, and Warnaco, just to name a few. The whole conglomerate works with the World Bank Group and the United Nations agencies and the European Commission, overseas development agencies, and a number of bilateral agencies from the United Kingdom and from Japan and North America. The five-year report from 1990 to 95, published by the Prince of Wales Business Leaders Forum, reveals that it has acted as a catalyst for change on many levels of society using various conduits such as business, the public sector, non-governmental organizations, corporations, and international agencies like the World Bank and the UN, which have fostered many different types of partnerships on a global basis. See, it's a whole series of partnerships that have been made, of covenants and agreements that have been made on a political, economic and social level, like a network, like a web all across the world. They're extant now. They've already been made. And, of course, others are going to be made. And they are all proposing and espousing the philosophy that we've been talking about here of controlling man through the ostensible force of the environment and environmental issues, but actually using that as a front to control the world. And that world control is in every form and facet you can think of. Political, economic, social, educational, and religious. And religious, absolutely. No question about that. In 1991, the Japanese Executive Management Training Program was launched. This is a unique transnational partnership between the government, business, and non-government sectors. In 1992, the Central Johannesburg Partnership was established, and it's a private sector organization committed to involving key stakeholders in Central Johannesburg, South Africa, to rejuvenate the central city areas. In 1993, the St. Petersburg Initiative was established. Its mission has been discovering how to rejuvenate the old city of St. Petersburg, which is also a UNESCO heritage site, by the way, into a tourist attraction. The partnership includes the World Tourism and Travel Academy, American Express, British Air, and Boeing, to name a few, in addition to the Grand Metropolitan, which is a huge conglomerate in England, I believe. In May of 1993, the BOC Group invested in Poland by acquiring a major part of the former Polish state's gas supplier, Polgas. The new company, Bock Gazy, was formed in partnership with the Polish State Treasury and has an active involvement with the Prince of Wales Business Leaders Forum. The idea of a welding school materialized. Since Bock Gazy has major investments in China and has established a cooperative venture with a local university to offer MBA-style training for Bock Chinese managers, it is a key supplier of the Prince of Wales Business Leaders Forum Shanghai Business Leadership 2000 program. That's a mouthful. Hope you got it. But this venture is in partnership with the Prince of Wales Business Leaders Forum, the Mayor of Shanghai University, Coopers and Lybrand, and Coca-Cola, just to name a few of the corporations. Its purpose is to promote cross-cultural understanding among Chinese and Western business leaders and to help them manage the dramatic economic and social changes they face. Other partnerships that have been created by the Prince of Wales Business Leaders Forum are in Hungary, in Russia, India, Thailand, Vietnam, South Africa, Egypt, Brazil, Mexico, to name a few. Although the Prince of Wales Business Leaders Forum was established in 1990, it really wasn't until the president of the World Bank, James Wolfenschön, met with the prince in July of 1996 that a more formal alliance was begun between the two. At the September 1996 annual meeting of the International Monetary Fund and World Bank, a workshop on corporate governance was conducted. During a telephone interview with James Newson from the Prince of Wales Business Leaders Forum on September 9, 1997, he reports that the Prince of Wales Business Leaders Forum signed an alliance with the World Bank in early 1997. This alliance is a three-year research project being undertaken by the Forum with the World Bank and the United Nations Development Program to, and I quote, to identify, analyze, and promote examples of how business is working in partnership with public sector institutions, non-governmental organizations, and other private sector enterprise to play a creative and positive role in the process of development, end of quote. Stage 1 was launched at the 1996 IMF World Bank annual meeting. Stage 2 is going to involve a more detailed analysis of the policies and practices of the 20 to 25 leading multinational companies and industry sectors, reviewing global management structures and key commercial and social activities, assessing their developmental impact in two emerging economies. Stage 3 is to be completed by the end of 1998 and is going to involve a survey of stakeholder attitudes to the changing role of business in development. Lastly, it is evident that the Prince of Wales is orchestrating a major change in world order. All of the above things that I've been talking about here, brethren, are examples as to how this change is going to permeate where we live. These things, these entities that have been created, these partnerships, these agreements, these networks that have been created over the last number of years through the 80s and 90s, all seem to be so benign in their nature. They seem to be for ostensibly good purposes, but they are actually part of a global system that is ultimately going to control the world, and this is the way it's encroaching upon the likes of you and me and our fellow citizens in this country and in other nations around the world. In some countries in this world, this type of approach is not going to work, because they already are economically deprived that they can be taken over without a covert sort of situation. But when you are talking about a nation as large as the United States, as prosperous as the United States, as militarily armed as the United States is, you just don't go in and take over overnight. There's no way to do it. This has to be systematically accomplished. And that is precisely what these people are doing. Now, the time is coming. The time is coming when you and I are probably going to have to stand up for what we believe in a little bit more than we have in the past, perhaps a lot more. The corporate governance idea, government by corporation, calls for a complete change in how employees are trained and educated in any company's corporate philosophy. It now becomes the community philosophy. Think about it for a minute. Could the United Nations, through, quote, world government, end quote, get their policies adopted at the local level? No, not likely. However, through corporations, the United Nations can change governance and reach every one of us, from the chief executive officer and the vice president to the mid-level manager down to the man or woman on the cleaning crew. If you want to pay your bills, you are going to have to agree with the corporate philosophy. Or you will either do that or you will stand up no matter what the cost. And the cost will be, as I said before, that you will lose your ability to earn a living. Not to mention what punishments might come upon you or what terror might be inflicted upon you for perhaps disobeying in some way the laws that were on the books. Once sustainable development is the norm, when it's taught in schools, in churches, oh yeah, society, government, entertainment, it will replace the values that are espoused in the Judeo-Christian ethic or the Judeo-Christian worldview. It should be noted that in most of the countries around the world, sustainable development has been taught for a number of years. The United States, once again, presents the biggest challenge to those who wish to change us. And yet the educational process is already taking place at universities in this country, particularly at the University of Michigan, which offers corporate environmental management programs to introduce students to global sustainable development issues in business. At Stanford University's Graduate School of Business, one of the top such schools in the country, a broad program in corporate citizenship includes elective topics on environmental management and corporate governance power and responsibility. The goal is to educate the manager for the 21st century as someone who understands the environment, the ecology, the technology, the social responsibility of the organization, private, public, nonprofit, makes no difference, and working with NGOs, remember what they are, non-government organizations, the public, citizens groups, and public-private partnerships. The reach of the Prince of Wales around the world is very deep, very vast, very broad, as evidenced in the partners and advisors that are affiliated with him, which include the Club of Rome, the Society for International Development. By the way, the former head of the United Nations, Boutros-Ghali, is the head of the Society for International Development. And if you know anything about that man, you know what side he's on. The UN Development Program, which we mentioned before. These, along with other partners that I've talked about here, reveal a man in Prince Charles with immense power. In 1992, the Prince of Wales Business Leaders Forum was approached by the chief executive of the Intercontinental Hotels and Resorts with a new idea to utilize the environmental experience of the forum in developing an industry-wide environmental initiative. A group of international hotels signed a compact, and the International Hotel Environment Initiative was born. The true philosophy of sustainable development, which is control of all resources on the planet, that objective... Under that objective, people are going to be conditioned. And people are being conditioned, I may as well say that as well. And it's coming from the global to the local through business. Just like this International Hotel Environment Initiative. It's already begun to affect the hotel and motel business in this country. Hotels in partnership with the Prince of Wales Business Leaders Forum include the biggest, most luxurious in the world, such as Accor, Forte, Hilton International, Holiday Inn Worldwide, ITT Sheraton, Intercontinental, Mandarin Oriental Hotel Group, Marriott Lodging Group, Marco Polo Hotels, Radisson, SAS Hotels Worldwide, Renaissance Hotels International, and the Taj Group of Hotels. Now, I realize that Motel 6 wasn't on there. But, brethren, that is quite a group. All of the top hotels and hotel chains and hotel conglomerates are in partnership with the Prince of Wales Business Leaders Forum. I tell you, brethren, what is happening is that people around the world, and especially in this country, are being conditioned to accept what is going on as being ostensibly good so that we don't question it. And the laws are made more and more difficult, or the laws that are on the books and that are being put on the books are making it more and more difficult for the middle class to really focus upon anything other than survival, other than locking into that system and getting enough money to pay your bills and to enjoy a little of the extras of life. And as long as that is in place, then the planners can slowly encroach more and more and more into your life and mine and into your freedoms and mine. And that is exactly what is happening. When the United States ratified the UN Charter, we and the other countries of the world who were not part of Britain's Commonwealth reverted back under British rule through the United Nations, through its organizational structure. Remember on the first tape of the tape last week, I should say, I talked about the Rhodes Trust, Cecil Rhodes. Well, if the Rhodes legacy is now complete through the United Nations, then what we are seeing besides world government and the accompanying economic infrastructure, which is environmentally sustainable, is also a world religion. Prince Charles negates the resurrection of Jesus Christ. He reduces him to a, quote, good teacher, end of quote. Maybe a prophet alongside Muhammad, Confucius, and the other founders of the world's religions. Charles is basically pagan in his own personal religious beliefs, even though his family is ostensibly religious in the sense that they do go to church. Prince Charles is of another ilk entirely. He is basically an earth worshiper. He worships and serves the creation rather than the creator. The movement toward a world religion can also be seen in the establishment of the United Religions Organization. Excuse me. In June 1995, at the 5th anniversary celebration, or 50th, I'm sorry, anniversary of the celebration of the UN held in San Francisco, the Right Reverend William E. Swing, Bishop of California and trustee of Grace Cathedral, is one of the chief founders of the United Nations, or the United Religions Organization. Grace Cathedral is where the founders of the UN held a service commemorating their efforts to finalize the UN Charter back in 1945. Since Bishop Swing is the key motivator behind what is called the United Nations of World Religions, I think it's very appropriate to read just a little bit of a quote from him. He says, well, 50 years ago there was a service at Grace Cathedral for the United Nations, and in those days, I must say, it doesn't look anything like today's service. In those days, you could just come into a Christian cathedral and you'd have a Christian service, and that was on behalf of the whole world, and that was the way it was done. 50 years later, the world has changed dramatically, and we've had to broaden our understanding of God, that we have to not only tolerate, not only respect, but now we have to move beyond that to enter into the higher pursuit of a relationship with God, with people from all the religions of the world. The world is getting smaller and smaller. There's one financial world. There's more or less one newspaper world. There's one entertainment world. But there's one aspect of the world that has not been developed, and that is there's not a soul of the world. There's no place where the great striving and the spiritual yearnings of the world can be expressed and the conscience of the world can be voiced in one place. So that's where we're aiming. Instead of having our own tribal religious identities, that we can now begin to think in terms of broadening the religious dialogue so that we can make it as a community. End of quote. In other words, if you disagree with the world ecumenical religious movement which is being propagated, you're not participating to peace. You're not contributing to peace in the community. The United Religious Organizations and the holistic beliefs of Prince Charles are setting the stage for one of his future titles, and it's called Defender of the Faith. Charles, once he is crowned king, will be called the Defender of the Faith. There's been a lot of speculation with regard to when Charles will become the king. Does he really need to become king, or does he already have a throne in reality? I mean, the environmental agenda through sustainable development, the public-private partnerships with the world's largest and strongest multinational corporations, many of which have cash flows and assets that exceed that of many countries. These provide Prince Charles with a throne right now. It appears that he rules behind the scenes, encouraging, expanding, and pushing the agenda of the United Nations, partnering with the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, and the other global agencies, all of which are advancing world government, a philosophy with which he is very comfortable. After all, there have been many kings and popes and world leaders who have tried to attain it. When one takes a look at the nearly 50 multinational corporations on the directorate of the Prince of Wales Business Leaders Forum, 23 of them are in the Business Week's Global 1000 corporations with a market value of over $1 trillion. Apart from the manufacturing base he has amassed, travel and tourism is the world's largest industry and generator of jobs. It provides direct and indirect employment for 200 million people around the world, one in every nine workers. Its gross domestic product generates more than that of the gross national product of the United States of America. It is through public-private partnerships that corporations will replace a nation's rule. When you have a board of appointed people representing government, corporations, the private sector, and non-governmental organization, money rules, not government, not the people. What we see in the making now is a new form of governments transcending national boundaries and borders, transcending elected officials, transcending the will of the people. Little by little, people are going to be squeezed out, and this so-called new world order is going to fully emerge. But it's not going to be called that necessarily. And by many people, it will not necessarily be viewed as that. It will simply be taken in stride. After all, we've taken so many things in stride in this country, and we have observed things that have happened in other countries and taken them in stride because we are not focused on these issues, because we do not see and understand what is behind these issues. And if it takes a little bit more of our freedom today, we look at what we still have left and are happy to have it. And when it takes a little more next year, we still then will put our heads in the sand and turn our backs to it and face and try to enjoy what little we have. We are so focused on ourselves, so focused on what we can see and hold in our hands, that we are just distracted to the point that we throw our hands up and say, how can you fight City Hall? Or we're just so oblivious and ignorant of what's going on and focused in another direction that the powers that be are able to encroach upon us even further. Well, lastly, I must say, the environment is something that all of the people of the world share, whether it's air or water, whether it's fish or fowl, it makes no difference. And whoever controls the environment controls man. And this is the objective, and this is the goal. The work that Prince Charles is spearheading has been gaining momentum. He is at the heart of what is going on in the world as it relates to power, control, philosophy, and forward thinking at every level of society. Because of who he is, doors automatically open and people flock to him. His tentacles are very long, and they reach into virtually every area of life and business and government. He transcends politics, he transcends national borders, he transcends religion. He is very powerful by way of position and lineage, inheritance, importance, and influence. So is his father, Prince Philip, who I haven't talked about very much, but if it were not for Prince Philip, the likelihood we would not be talking about Prince Charles, because Prince Philip has been his predecessor and his example, who this man has worked behind the scenes tirelessly in England, Europe, and with other ties to this country for the entire time that he has been in, has been tied into the British crown, the British throne, which would go back into the late 40s and early 50s. And it's just amazing the power behind the scenes that Prince Philip has wielded, and the agreements and the philosophies that he has espoused, and the relationships that he has developed among power brokers throughout the world. Well, Prince Charles has become heir to that, and then has used that as his springboard to go further in the current period of time. But he is involved. He transcends national borders, religion, and politics. He is very powerful by the way of his position. He is out to remake society and to mold it into an entirely different image that is based on the Gaia philosophy, that everything in the environment is equal and must be treated as equals, and we must have laws that enforce that and penalties that are exacted for anyone who breaks it. And as I said before, an animal is not likely to break that law. A fish is unlikely to break that law. A wind or a storm or a so-called, quote, act of God, as they say, is not going to break that law. Rain is not going to do it. Minerals in the ground are not going to do it. The only entity in that partnership, if you will, that is going to be covered by these laws that will break those laws are man, human beings. And that's really what it's all about, is to control human beings. If you control human beings, you have everything else. If you control the environment, you control human beings. If you believe, brethren, that the Bible teaches that before it's all over, there is going to be a beast power, and that beast power is going to stretch his tentacles out around this world, and that control is what he is about, and that he is the enemy of the truth, if you believe those things, not saying when that's going to happen, if you believe those things, what I am explaining to you very rapidly and very briefly on this tape is precisely what could be used to achieve those kinds of goals. Now, we haven't even talked about military goals. We haven't talked about how the educational systems of the world have been tainted and have been corrupted over the last 30 years. We haven't even talked about the religion. I just simply mentioned this one United Nations religious organization that has as its goal the amalgamation of all religions, the highest respect paid to all religions, pagan, Catholic, Protestant, you name it. But there's a lot more that can be said about the ecumenical movement in this world, which is really what is known now as the New Age movement. Ultimately, that is their goal. The goal of the New Age movement is to have a one-world religion in which you become your own savior, in which you do not owe allegiance to any god. You are God. You are your own God, and you are your own savior, and you are your own forgiver. It's a horrible situation and system that is extant in the world today. It is tied in at every level like a web entrapping the world. But yet, in our country, things still are bumping along, edging along. But I tell you, brethren, we are being moved further and further and further over the brink. And we are at a point now that it is not going to take much for us to be plunged into deep economic depression and into social disorder. And when that happens, laws that are on the books, both the United Nations law as well as our own national law, are going to come into play. Laws you never knew existed are going to be suddenly brought to bear on situations once the problem and the trials and the difficulties become so great that it produces social unrest in this country. What Prince Charles is espousing, if it is implemented further, and there's every sign and reason to believe that it will be ongoing until God stops it, well, as it continues, it's going to ultimately affect and change the life of every person on earth, because we will become slaves to the new feudal landlords, those with power and money. To a great extent, we're already that way. We're already locked into a system in which that's true, but we still have some flexibility. We still have some freedom. Soon, we will not. Sustainable development demands that every crust of bread be measured against what a person consumes in order to protect resources for future generations. Is all of this the new divine right of kings? The mainstream media would have us believe Charles is not the real Charles. The real Charles has a global agenda of his own. And it's not just his own in the sense that he came up with it all. Oh, no. Prince Charles works with others. And these goals have been devised and have come from the minds, the fertile minds of carnally minded, satanically inspired men and women in this world. Prince Charles may very well be among them. I don't mean to say Prince Charles is inspired by demons. I don't think I can say that. But I can say that he certainly is using his position, his influence, his family ties to promote a philosophy that is clearly non-biblical, unscriptural, anti-God, anti-Christian, if you won't permit me to use that term, and indeed, anti-Christ. Antichrist, no question about it. Not saying he is the Antichrist, but he is participating in a thrust that works hand in glove with those who do and may very well comprise the Antichrist in our day and time. He is a very major player, that's my bottom line, and in the end time game, and he certainly bears close scrutiny by all of us. And I'm giving you this, I'm sharing this with you, brethren, not to cause you to think that you're supposed to rise up in revolt, or not to roundly condemn a man that, we should respect, or whatever. And don't send me letters, please, saying, well, you're supposed to speak, you don't fear about speaking evil of dignities, do you? Just like it says in the book of Jude. Brethren, I don't mean to speak evil of the man. All I'm doing is describing what he is involved in. If it's evil, then it's evil. It's not me speaking evil of him. It's me exposing, if you will permit me to use that term, exposing his evil, or at least to his participation in plans that are clearly outside the parameters of what God has established. And so he is a man that needs to be taken seriously in this world. And I want you to please never forget what I have covered on these two tapes concerning this public-private partnership. I don't feel like I've adequately discussed it at all. And I wish I had more time and energy to do it. And I may, on a future tape, get into it even more and show some more specific examples of public-private partnerships and how they work and how sinister this can be if they are allowed to be implemented on a global scale. So I'm going to leave off right there, and since the tape is near the end, and I'm pretty much running out of steam physically here too, so I'll just leave that with you and conclude here on this eighth tape in the series on globalism. I hope that this has been profitable to you, and as I said, on our next tape, we'll get back to some biblical subjects. Just as a matter of interest, I will tell you that I'm going to be traveling some. I'm going to try to arrange a visit outside of our local area here with brethren in other parts of the country approximately once a month, and in a couple of cases twice a month throughout 1998, as God provides both the opportunity, and well, those opportunities are already there, so I guess unless he closes that door, because I already have the invitations basically in most of those areas, but as he provides the wherewithal and the strength that I need personally, I'm going to try to stick to that schedule. But of course I will have to analyze the situation on a case-by-case basis as I get there. But I will be going to Birmingham, Alabama next week. We'll be there this Sabbath, speaking there. And then I will be in, should be in Florida sometime in February. And I forget, I think Denver, Colorado in March. And then I'll go on from there. I don't really have off the top of my head here where I'm going. But I will keep you informed, and I do want to ask your prayers. When I go to speak to these other groups, I always try to go with a message that stirs and encourages the brethren to stand up on their own spiritual feet and to recognize and realize that it is possible for us to have a powerful relationship with God and with our Savior apart from large church affiliations and corporate religious entities. And so I really feel like that what I cover in these opportunities to visit is of importance to people. It's not just going there and entertaining people for an hour and a half or 2 hours and having them recognize me and give me a pat on the back and then go on. I certainly have no interest in that type of an approach at all. And I hope that when I go to these places, my intent is to make an impact that in what I say, not in my own personal presence, because my personal presence is, quite frankly, very shocking to most people. I've found it to be true that when people meet me for the first time, having heard my voice on tape, why they are taken aback a bit, because I'm probably not what they expected. I weigh about 125 pounds now. I look like a concentration camp victim to some people, I'm sure, even to myself. And I'm just not what people are prepared to see when they compare the voice with the face. But that's good, you know. I've had that reaction so many times that now I laugh at it, because I see that God's probably arranged it this way, in a manner of speaking, because at least if there is any impact in what I do, I want it to be in the message that is given and not in the messenger. And so that's my intent and purpose when I do visit, is to make an impact in that way for good. So I would appreciate it if you would keep me in your prayers as you are in mine. May God's blessing be upon you until we are able to meet again here next week.